Welcome to the Tommyknocker Tapes. I'm your host, Michael Bouchard. In this episode, I get to sit down with Stephen Burge. Stephen Burge is a Denver local actor who came to us from tours of And Then They Came For Me and A Christmas Carol. He made his debut in A Little Shop of Horrors, and he got to play God for quite a long time in the Denver Center's long-running production of An Act of God. In this, we get to talk about comedy, we get to talk about his ideas of success, but we begin by talking about his new one-hander called Batshit. I'm here with Stephen Burge. Stephen, it's so lovely to talk to you.
Aw, thanks. It's lovely to talk to you, too.
Stephen, I just kind of want to dive in with you. You've done a bunch of musicals throughout your career, comedies, one-man shows, and what I want to talk to you today about is that you are producing, or not producing, you're writing your own one-man show, which is tentatively titled, last I checked, Batshit, which I love. So start me off. Tell me, how did that happen?
How did that happen? What a great question. I don't actually know how it happened. I know that it's supposed to be about my journey through sobriety and how much life has sort of changed for me in some ways, and how in order to go through that journey, I had to come face to face with some mental illness, you know, so that's why it's called Batshit, because that is a phrase, of course, that, you know, people use to mean crazy. And I did this during COVID. When everyone else started drinking, I quit drinking.
I'm sure I'm like a lot of other people. I've written things before. They're not any good. I'm guessing that there are a lot of other people, actors, that have written in order to try and get some work for themselves. That's one way to create your own work, is just to sit down and write it. And the other is there are a lot of actors that are just also passionate writers. So kind of, how did you come to the writing aspect of things? Was this something you always wanted to do, or is this something you've always had a passion for? Have you written a lot in previous times, or was this kind of brand new? Or tell me about it.
No, I've always done it, as in like always. So I wasn't very good at math or science or any of those subjects, but I excelled in reading and comprehension and literature and creative writing and things like that. So when I say that this has always been a part of my life, I mean that. I've always been a storyteller as well. And this is not the first thing that I've written, but it is the second thing that I have decided to share with the world. Nope, that sounds a little pretentious. It is the second thing that I've decided to share with someone who expressed interest in helping me share it. I don't know why, but writing is, though storytelling is a part of me, I feel way more nervous to share my words than I do my acting. And I'm not sure why that is, other than, you know, forever it's been easy to find audition for this thing in a newspaper or when those existed, or, you know, but I never knew how to do something with my writing. So I think that it became more and more personal. And that was only because I didn't know how to make it not personal, as in literally, I didn't know how to share it or get it in front of people. It was, you know, as I said, easy to be like, oh, go audition for this thing and then book it, hopefully. But I don't know that there's the same outlet for writers, right? You don't just open a newspaper or a website and be like, looking for submissions, in the same way theaters will say looking for actors. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what was how did you get that to happen? So again, most actors will find it on a website somewhere, there's an audition, but there's nothing like that for writing. So how did you make that connection with the theater company in order to get your writing produced?
I'm just going to be really transparent. It is in this instance, I don't know for other people, but it's sort of who you know. And I wish that, at least for me, and I don't know, again, I am so new to this that I don't know, I wouldn't have advice for someone to follow necessarily, other than find out in your own personal contacts if you have anyone who does this kind of thing. This piece was conceived, why do I say that in the third person? I mean, I conceived this piece as a book, right? Like, I love David Sedaris, and I think trying to emulate him, his work in some ways. So I started writing this more as a collection of essays. And my friend Helen, she is now the leader at American Stage in St. Petersburg, Florida. And the theater that she leads has something called the Lift Every Voice New Play Festival. And they're looking for BIPOC writers and writers who are members of the LGBTQAI alphabet mafia, I guess. Uh-huh. And so I fit into the second group of people. And so she asked me if I had any interest in sharing the work as a play, as a one person play, or exploring if it would even be feasible or accessible as a one person play. So she's been sort of coaching me and inspiring me and encouraging me to explore it in that way, not just as a collection of essays. And she decided to make that ask because she'd seen me do some things for a podcast called The Narrators, which is produced in Denver and I believe San Diego, I think. I'd done a few storytelling things for them that had been selected to, you know, go into the podcast. She had been present for the recording in a couple instances. She'd heard the podcasts that I had been a part of in a couple instances. And so she had this idea that perhaps the book or collection of essays that I was working on could be translated into a one-person show. So in a lot of ways, this is her doing and would not have come to be if it weren't for a theater producer believing not just in me, but in the different ways this work could potentially be presented.
So it sounds like you're getting some help on how you're going about writing this. So my next question for you is basically about your process. You said you've done a lot of creative writing and it's always been something that you've done. So what would you say your process is as you approach writing all this down? You're turning from essays and now it's going from essays into a show. What's that been like?
I start with the thing that interests me or that sparks my imagination, and then I fill in the gaps as I see them. I know that is not the way a lot of other people work, but my brain doesn't really work linearly. So I just have to follow my brain. The other thing with that script is I would write it when I was drunk. And so now that I'm not drunk, I've found there's a challenge. There's a challenge for me. I sit down to write something and I immediately start editing or get second guessing or whatever. And that didn't happen when I was drinking because my brain was kind of shut off. So finding a way to do this sober has also been challenging because I have to really remind myself to write it before I edit it and try to find the thing that allowed me to just dump out garbage without judging it in prior writing experiences that I found through drinking that now I can't find because I'm not drunk. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like when your brain is under the influence of a substance, you're just more relaxed. You're less judgmental. People ask me, about my journey to sobriety, why I started drinking or why I quit or anything like that. And it's a weird conversation to have because I know that the answer is supposed to be, I started drinking because this horrible thing happened and I needed to numb my brain or, whatever story a lot of people in recovery tell that is almost heroic in their journey to sobriety. I have to tell you, I started drinking because it was fun. And I stopped drinking because it wasn't fun anymore, you know? And I wish that there was something bigger. I mean, now that I'm in therapy, I know that I can identify lots of reasons why I kept drinking. And one of them is about turning off my brain. But you know, that sometimes I think it can be more simple than that. Sometimes I think it can be, it was fun. I had a good time. I felt more myself or some version of myself or whatever. It doesn't have to be this big thing that people make it. And the same with quitting.
The answer seems to sound like your approach to writing a show about sobriety is actually woven into writing the play about sobriety. Like the sobriety itself is part of the writing about sobriety, which I think is a lot of fun, actually. Which was sort of going to bring me to my next question, which is what's something that that's kind of hit you in this process that is that you weren't expecting or you hadn't seen before? And it does kind of sound like that's the answer, is that as you've been approaching it, the soberness that before you wouldn't have had to deal with and your inhibitions would have been down and you're just kind of shot words on a page. Now it's something you have to get through as you're also working through the very idea itself of sobriety. So yeah, that's great.
Awesome. Great. So I already answered two questions.
You're killing it. So aside from this play, this is what we're going to kind of jump off now and get a little more general.
Okay.
Because you are not simply just a playwright. You're also a very, very talented actor and comedian. And I want to also kind of pick your brain on these. Basically, what's it like a diamond that you have created through stress over time that you now know that you would wish or want to share?
I think don't assume you know everything. When I was younger, I was like, I know how to land this joke. I know how to make people like me. All of this kind of stuff, right? Like they say that I wish I would have conquered the world when I was 20 and I knew everything instead of waiting until now and I don't know anything. And I think that is very true. At some point, I got past this need. I think it was to prove myself or to claim my place amongst whatever community I had entered. And I started listening to other people. And that's been huge, right? Just listening to other people and taking their advice and incorporating their ideas, because if you're working with a director or a producer or whomever, sure, they might be a hack. Maybe they got there for some reason that is not based on their skill, talent, or experience. But that has not, for the most part, been my experience. And when I let go of needing to know everything and embraced not knowing anything, I think things got easier and funnier.
Nice. Yeah, I've always likened it to learning to want to be the dumbest person in the room.
Yep.
Yeah. Because if you're the dumbest, then that means everyone else is brilliant and you are in good hands.
I don't know if this question is coming up or not, but I also have noticed that I don't say this to get any sort of like affirmation. No, that's not true. I say it because it's true. I have never been the smartest person in the room. I have never been the funniest person in the room or the most talented, but I am often, especially lately, the nicest, I think. Not the nicest, but among the nicest. And certainly
that's something the nicest person would say.
certainly one of the nicest and one of the people who is not going to fight back a lot unless there's a reason to fight back. And I don't mean that I lay down and just become someone's doormat, but that idea of listening and that idea of taking direction, I think might be in some ways, I don't know, but like a lost art or a lost skill set. So one, certainly when I'm doing it, like teaching or leading a workshop, I tell people not to be a dick, right? Like eventually everyone's going to get to a point where you get into a room or an audition situation, and there's going to be I would say a baseline of talent, right? There's going to be any number of actors that can be chosen for a role. And therefore, if one actor is known to be a dick and one actor is not, I think that sometimes it comes down to that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So speaking of other actors, so this is a question where you can finally talk about someone that isn't yourself. What is, just of all of your time that you've spent in the community and working in theater, what are some of the things that you've seen from the actors that you admire most that you have personally attempted to steal or have wanted to steal that you can share?
I'm probably going to say something that you're going to be like, I have to cut that out. But I'm just going to say it. A lot of times, I think women are funnier than men. Quite literally, I've stolen delivery, tonality and delivery from Cassandra Peterson, who is probably better known as Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Yeah.
I've stolen stuff from Megan Mullally, Karen Walker from Will and Grace. I've definitely stolen stuff from, oh my gosh, Miss Hannigan from, what is her name? Why did I just blank on it? The Carol Burnett. I've stolen her delivery from stuff. And so much so that some of these lines, some of these deliveries, some of these tonalities are just in my brain and my body now.
So let's jump into then the thing that I really want to talk about, which I always love talking about, which is comedy in general. So I'm just going to ask you the most open-ended question ever, which is, what do you find funny and why?
I love it when you think you know the punchline that's going to come, and then there's like a hard left turn. And I think that one of the masters of that was Megan Mullally. I mean, just in Will and Grace, you would think that the answer was going to be yes, and she would switch it, and the answer was actually no. And even after you knew that that character is going to do that, it was still never not funny to me. So I love it when there's a sense of surprise. What else do I like? I definitely like just like old school physical humor. You know that scene from the Carol Burnett show? I can't remember. Tim Conway.
Going downstairs?
When he's being the dentist and he accidentally Novocaines himself.
Oh, yes.
Oh my gosh. Why is that so funny to me? I can just watch it on repeat. Another guy, Victor Borga. I can't say his last name. He's the piano player. One time, this unexpected thing, it's not going to be funny, especially out of context, but he was an incredibly talented pianist, and he would do things like play his music upside down, so the song would be kind of identifiable, but then he would be like, oh, and flip the music and pretend that he was needing to put it right side up, and then it would be immediately identifiable, that kind of thing. And I don't know why this makes me laugh so hard, but there was one where he looked into the audience, stood up and said, pardon me, madam, are you laying eggs? And why, right? Like, that is a surprise. That's something that you don't expect to hear. But I assume that she was making a face, and he addressed that by asking her if she was laying eggs. Hilarious. Hilarious.
That's amazing.
Oh, so I guess that's it. I think that funny comes from intelligence to me anyway. I think that it takes a lot of skill to play the piano badly, but still appealingly in that case. Or who was it? The Lemon Sisters, the Cherry Sisters. I can't remember their name either, but they were sort of a send up of the Andrew Sisters, where they sang terribly, right? And it was hilarious to listen just exactly how off pitch or how awful the harmonies they were attempting would be. But it was only possible because in real life, they were all incredibly skilled vocalists, right? So I think that treating comedy like a science, treating it with the same discipline and bringing the same necessary skill sets and precision, I think that is when people are the funniest, when they don't just sort of splatter it, but when they know what they're doing, right, and they can do it, they can do it well, which I guess is that same thing of like turning left when you think they're going to go right. You think they're going to sing beautifully and they don't. You think they're going to play perfectly and they don't. You think the punchline is going to be this, but it's that. And I think you can only do that if you're kind of a scientist, I guess.
Right. And you've been in this for, you've seen this and done this so many times that you'd figure that even for you, it would be kind of hard to fool. At a certain point, like, you do know what's coming, you know the form. So if you can fool me, you've done really, really well using that scalpel.
Yeah, or even if you know, to me, even if I know it's coming and I find joy in watching it get there. As you said, I now know, especially if I'm rewatching something, I know what the punchline is gonna be, but I delight in watching a talented comedian get to the punchline. I have a tendency to cry for silly things. At the end of Hairspray, the musical, there's a moment in the finale, You Can't Stop the Beat, where all of the instruments drop out and it's just vocals in tight harmonies and drums. And every single time that happens, I cry. And it's, I don't know why. I'm not sad at all. I wouldn't even say I'm necessarily moved, but there's something very exciting about that. And when that moment comes, no matter how many times I've seen it, it still generates the same emotional effect. And I think that comedy kind of does the same thing. When I'm watching someone who's really, really good at it do it really, really well, even if I know what they're about to do, I still end up laughing almost in celebration of their brilliant execution. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, that makes sense. I love that. So the last thing I'll ask you is, this is more for people that are kind of up and coming. So I don't mean to give away our age, but at least to say that we have been doing this for a while. And I always see people giving advice in places where, you know, they'll say, try this and try that. And, you know, they don't want to yuck anybody's yum. But I do find that it would be terrible if we didn't at least try and give some help to the next generation coming up on things to possibly avoid and to save their time and other avenues to direct themselves. Is there anything in your life where you thought, I wish I'd saved my time there or I found it another way faster or better?
Boy, I think deciding how you're going to define success is important. I think that there's, of course, this idea that the Broadway stage or the silver screen, that is success. After you've done that, then you've achieved success. And I 1,000% believe that to be true. If that's your goal, and for everyone who's ever achieved that, yay, I never did. I also didn't try that hard for it. And I'm not saying that if I would have, I would have achieved at that level. I'm absolutely not saying that. But what I am saying is that at some point, my definition of success sort of changed for myself. I realized that I had paid all or most of my bills, either acting or singing or writing marketing copy. Eventually, my passion for writing sort of transitioned itself into marketing and speech writing and things like that for executives and other people. And there was something that felt very successful about that. I wasn't rich. I still worried about when was the next check going to come for sure. But after however many years, I was like, whoa, I just did that for a decade or whatever. I paid my bills. I did my thing through my art because of my art. And I felt successful. And I think that holding on to that when people are coming up and deciding this is the path they want to take, I can't even imagine how hard it must be. It was hard enough for us, you know, it is hard enough for us. But now when you're competing with social media as another medium, it's not just stage or screen or music. Now you have this thing called social media that can make or break you depending on your age and what you've already put into the world or what you're starting to put into the world. There's this whole new mystery medium that, from my old person perspective, doesn't necessarily require the skill or the science that you and I are talking about. You know, in some cases, it seems like you just have to be really pretty or know how to engage an audience. And there's a whole nother way to define success. So I think that when a young person is deciding that this is going to be his, her, or their career path, they should be very open to the idea of what success can look like and open to the idea that it does not have to look one certain way.
That is a fantastic answer. Stephen Burge, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks for inviting me to talk to you.
Of course.
The first part, especially, I feel gross about. So I'm going to edit and make me some smart, okay?